It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And it's a very good morning to you at 9:07 on this Wednesday, the 28th of February 2024. How are you all keeping? It is a leap year. Is anyone born on the 29th listening to the show? What's it like being whatever age old you are? Do you count your age every 4 years? I don't know. Anyone out there celebrating a leap year birthday? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. What is life like for a leap year baby? Also, is anyone going to pop the question tomorrow? Is today or tomorrow not the day that traditionally or in the past ladies can propose or do or tend to propose to men? Has that ever happened to any of you listeners out there? Let us know again, 086 60 25,000. Or maybe you want to pop the question live on the show tomorrow. I have no problem with that whatsoever. We can sort that out for you. But anyway, whatever way you want to, whatever you want to talk about, by the way, if you want to text in on those topics or raise your own other issues, the lines are open for you right now, really, is where I was trying to get to. 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Now, we welcome your contact from outside the Republic as well. Many of you listening to the show, feel free to get in touch there. For WhatsApp, it's free to text wherever you are in the world, 00353 86 60 25,000. And emails, you know yourself, comments at highlandradio.com. And feel free to comment on our social medias if it suits you to watch the show. YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland on your smart TV, your Fire Stick or your mobile devices, and we're across our Facebook pages as well. The Finn Valley Voice this morning. The Mayor of Donegal, Councillor Martin Harley, has vowed to fight for the retention of physiotherapy services at St Joseph's Hospital. It emerged last week that physiotherapy services at the Stranraer facility were to be discontinued. Relatives of residents at the facility are said to be alarmed at the news, which was only communicated to staff in the days leading up to the movement of services. The HSE chief said the decision was communicated on the back of a recent HICWA report on the facility. On to the Irish Times now, and of course that RTE story continues to rumble on. Sean Ní Rathaoirlí warned she could resign before a crucial appearance by Minister for Media Catherine Martin on RTE Primetime last week, according to the minister, and resisted attempts to arrange a meeting to discuss Ms Martin's disappointment in her. During a meeting at the Oireachtas Media Committee, Ms Martin revealed a day of frantic exchanges between her officials and former RTE chair Ms Ní Rathaoirlí in the run-up to the minister's appearance on Primetime last Thursday evening, after which the chair resigned. Now, I have sympathy in this instance for the media minister because, you know, she, as it relates to exit packages, there may well have been some communication from the board to Minister Martin's department. But my understanding is that twice she asked Ms Ní Rathaoirlí whether or not the board had knowledge or sign off on this exit package, and she didn't give the answer to that correctly. To say, well, the information is somewhere in your department, for me, I don't know. I think that's information that if I were asked by the boss here, that I'd be expected to answer. And also, the DG was sitting in on at least one of those meetings. What had he got to say about it? Also, the minister had booked a live TV interview. You know, we always are giving out that ministers refuse to answer questions or they skirt around questions or they try, you know, they filibuster effectively to waste up the time from time to time. But she didn't. She answered the questions pretty honestly. And she was asked if she had faith. And it's the big gotcha question. Do you have faith in such and such a person? And she probably answered that question honestly. So I don't know if you agree or disagree. It's a big mess whatsoever. But in this instance, I do have some sympathy, just as a consumer, to for Minister for Media Catherine Martin. Well, following an appearance that shed light on a dramatic breakdown in relations last week, the committee has now decided to extend an invitation to the former chair of RTE to appear before it as the fallout over Ms Ní Rathaoirlí's resignation continues to rock the government and the broadcaster. Ms Martin outlined yesterday evening repeated instances of Ms Ní Rathaoirlí giving her inaccurate information about the board's involvement in sign-offs with an exit package for the former chief financial officer, Richard Collins, as well as having apologised for failings to tell the minister she had sought the resignation of former RTE Director General Dee Forbes, which is very, very significant in that Dee Forbes' departure left an awful lot of questions unanswered that remain unanswered, that perhaps if they'd have been answered right at the beginning of all of this, we might not still be here. Okay, your views on that, if you're interested, 086 60 25,000. Enoch Burke remains in prison. Sacked school teacher Enoch Burke has been paid around €72,000 by the Department of Education since being suspended in August 2022. The High Court has heard Burke is still on administrative leave and being paid, despite not working for the past year and a half, during which time he has spent 281 days in prison for contempt of court. He's still in receipt of his salary while appealing against the decision by the Board of Management of Wilson's Hospital School to dismiss him in January last year. The appeal hearing has been delayed as a result of Burke's unsuccessful legal challenge to the composition of the appeals panel, and it remains unclear when it will take place. The fact Burke remains on the payroll emerged during a hearing where the court reviewed his ongoing detention for contempt of court over repeated breaches of an order restraining him from the premises of the County Westmeath School. Now, the court is of the view that he's in prison because he was sacked from the school. He kept attending the school, and they sought a court order to stop him attending the school. They were successful in that, and he continued to breach that court order and therefore is in contempt of court. That is the school's position. That's the court's position. He seems to go back a step or two and says the reason he's in prison is because he was sacked because he wouldn't accept transgenderism. And that's what they need to sort out. I'm not sure if anyone is actually benefiting from his incarceration, either he or the state. It's costing a fortune. But they need to sort of resolve somewhere in between his contention, and I hope I'm not misrepresenting it, that he is fundamentally in prison because of his opposed to transgenderism. But the reality is that according to the courts and according to the school, he's actually in prison because he was sacked for whatever reason, probably what we've been mentioning, and he kept turning up at school. They didn't want him near the school. They got a court order barring him from the school. He kept turning up at the school, and therefore he's in contempt of court. A significant story, in politics, I think, you know, when books are written into the future, this may be recorded. Who is to say who's writing the books? It's in the Irish Daily Star. But Michelle O'Neill became the first nationalist first minister to attend a football match at Windsor Park. The Sinn Féin vice president yesterday stood for God Save the King at the South Belfast venue before Northern Ireland women's football team took on Montenegro. They drew the game. Ms O'Neill arrived at the stadium with DUP Deputy First Minister Emma Little Pengley, and they were greeted by IFA President Conrad Kirkwood and its Chief Executive Patrick Nielsen. Now, in the past, what has tended to happen is that, of course, people do attend games, but they might turn up late or they might leave early to avoid having to stand for a particular national anthem or other. But in fairness to Michelle O'Neill, as I say, it is it's another little step perhaps in the right direction. She turned up on time and stood for that national anthem. The Irish Daily Mail, obviously anyone out there with little ones, either your own children or grandchildren or nephews and nieces, you know the story. TV does play a role in their lives. Peppa Pig has been around for ages, but now American parents are accusing Peppa Pig of turning their children into brats. She's the little pig whose puddle-jumping antics with her brother George have delighted children for years. But now parents in the US have turned on Peppa Pig, accusing the popular British animated series of turning their children into brats. They've complained to the Wall Street Journal that Peppa is a bully who fat-shames her father and is a malign influence on impressionable minds. One parent warned others not to let their children watch it, saying their daughter had begun to lash out after seeing it. There is so much verbal aggression. Peppa is rude, bossy, a liar, tattletale, and more, they wrote beneath a review of the show. Has Peppa Pig been on in your house? Do you agree? Does it turn kids into brats? 086 60 25,000. Now, you know, the issue of buses comes up all the time on this programme and has for years, and there's been a few issues to it, having to, firstly, how close you have to be to a school to be able to qualify for a bus pass. They're looking to maybe reduce that. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. Having to go to your nearest school, we've heard the stories of, you know, the routes being calculated over a mountain road that's impassable for half of the year for one reason or another. You know, really silly rules. All kids need to get to school. I don't think it's unreasonable for a bus service to be provided, but some of the rules, a lot of the rules around school buses make very little sense, from the tendering process to the allocation of seats. But fair bus school routes could be on the way. Unfair rules barring kids from state-funded buses because of how close they live to their school are set to be scrapped. Education Minister Norma Foley ordered a review into the school transport scheme 3 years ago after complaints children were being left behind because of them. Under the current rules, a secondary school child cannot get on a bus if they live within 4.8 kilometres of their school, while primary level kids must be at least 3.2 kilometres away from their school. The travel threshold for primary level children will now be reduced to just 1K, while secondary students will be allowed on the bus if they live 2.8 kilometres away. So this is probably quite significant for some of you out there. The price parents pay for the buses will remain frozen, at the current rate of €50 for primary level, €75 for secondary level students, and €125 for a family. The scheme currently costs the state £444 million, with the cost due to rise to £672 million in 2030. Two pilot programmes will be run in certain areas in September before rolling it out across the country. And also they're looking at allowing over 70s to drive the buses. My understanding is that if you're over 70, I think you can drive buses generally, but you can't drive school buses. So they're looking to change that because of a shortage of drivers. Okay, lastly, more drivers than ever are now claiming that electric vehicles generate the cheapest running costs. This is in the Irish Daily Mirror. As many as 90% they said they've made savings, an increase from 85% last year. Not surprising, because obviously petrol and diesel starting to edge up now for some, particularly if you've a smart meter, you can get some savings at night. The prices are coming down. Most people charge their cars at home, 80-odd percent, I think. Among the key findings of the latest study into the EV is the high repurchase rate, with 70% of drivers intending to stay electric for their next purchase, which I think is kind of interesting. It is quite high, 70%. Well, that means 30%, 3 out of 10 people who went electric are actually thinking, when they purchase their next car, of returning to an ICE engine, which I actually think is quite a significant number. A spokesperson for Dundeal, which carried out the study, said the survey found 90% of electric car drivers in Ireland have noted that the running costs are cheaper than petrol stroke diesel cars. And yet we still await for this, the numerous investments we've had announced to build up the charging infrastructure. And yet still you don't really see it on the ground. And still they maintain that by 2030, some 950,000 electric vehicles will be on Irish roads, but sales are slowing down a little. So it'll be interesting to see. You wouldn't buy a petrol car. If there was electric charging points everywhere and you wanted to buy a petrol car, but there were only like 4 or 5 petrol stations in Ireland, you wouldn't buy a petrol car. So until such time as they actually properly build up an electric charging infrastructure, they're always going to have issues with electric car sales. So we've seen reports that the council plans to fast track building 24 social housings in the Flaxfields area of Convoy. The current estate consists of 65 houses built around 2 decades ago and was built as a private housing estate. And I suppose on the face of it, the delivery of social housing, good news. But Garvin joins us on the programme now to discuss this. Good morning, Garvin. How are you?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. I think really the point you want to make from the get-go is that you're not against the provision or building of social housing, but you do have questions as it relates to these proposals.
Greg, no, definitely not against social housing. I was raised in a council estate myself, so it would be remiss of me to have any objections whatsoever. But I do have... I wouldn't call them objections, more observations and concerns in relation to what's happening with the build.
And what are they?
Well, in relation to the construction, there's a new sewage drainage plant in the houses, and the sewage with the area it's to be dug. It's very close to existing houses. The area is formerly quarry, and I'm very concerned of how the digging would affect the residents and the houses there already.
So you're probably looking at a prolonged period of rock breaking. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yes.
That's what you suspect. You wonder what impact that might have on existing properties.
Yes, I'd be worried about structural damage. I mean, the council was approached about this, and I was actually informed that this is a civil matter. So basically, what they're saying is, if anything happens, I have to go against the developer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the way things are going with Donegal, the things that are happening, I don't want myself or other neighbours to be just another statistic with the council.
Mm-hmm. You're also concerned that this patch of land that these houses might be built on was earmarked for something else previously.
Yeah, it was previously earmarked for a childcare facility and a park for the current residents. But also, on speaking to councillors myself, I was informed a few years ago that the area was actually zoned by the council and that no further building was permitted. As per the council, the convoy didn't have the infrastructure for these houses. Now, Flaxbings is built on a very steep hill. There's a housing estate across from Flaxbings, and there's one down below Flaxbings. And at the bottom of the hill is very liable to flooding if there's any sort of rain at all. And there's concerns as well that these new houses being connected to the current sewage and drainage system will cause even more issues.
And you have a number of other observations, and I mean, if you want to pick one or two out, you can. But at the end of the day, though, is it not the case that we are in a housing crisis, particularly here in Donegal, and that, you know, everything's not going to be perfect, Gavin, and that unfortunately, given the need for housing, you know, everyone's not going to be happy with it. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, I understand that. And I understand that. And again, I have no objection to the houses. And once they're constructed, good luck to whoever gets them. Yeah. And I hope they're happy in them. But it's the construction of them and the planning of them that needs to be got right from the start. In relation to the planning, I'm just finding my notes here.
That's all right, Garvin. Take your time.
It stated the new build is a continuation of the existing estate that's been built for 20 years. There's currently 65 houses in Flaxfields, 24 social housing to be built, so that's a total of 89. And 20% of that is 17.8, which would be 18 houses allowable. Mm-hmm. If you take the 65, there's 13 houses allowable. So whatever way you do the maths, it doesn't add up.
And what is the problem with the social housing being a greater percentage than, you know, might be laid out? What issues does that create, or what's the problem there?
Well, it creates extra stress on the resources and the drainage and the sewage in convoy that isn't sufficient already to satisfy what's there. And in relation to the planning also, I mean, on the council, all these documents are available on the council planning website. On the original application, it states that is this land, was it previously liable to flooding or quarry? The box is ticked no, but in fact, the land is quarry land.
Mm-hmm.
And another part states that are any third parties required to grant permission for the new sewage scheme as it connects to the current scheme?
Mm-hmm.
And that is answered that no third party permission needed as developer owns the green areas. Mm-hmm. I find that very difficult to believe. As, I mean, it's a private...
That's what's stated. I get you can have your personal concerns, but that's what's stated in the application, and that's what
I
have to go by. But you believe then that this is not given full consideration to the existing residents of Convoy, the infrastructure, even something as simple as, you know, the local road not being gritted as much as it should. You're saying that
yes.
more consideration needs to be given to all of this before it proceeds?
Well, I think it needs to be looked at, and we need to get answers to all the questions, and the council needs to be open and transparent with the residents that's already there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
That's, I mean, as I said, I mean, all we're looking for is answers. We're not looking to object to anything. I mean, I want to state as well that, I mean, I'm not part of any organisation or group or committee. I mean, I'm just phoning on behalf of myself as a resident there and concerned for my neighbours as well.
You're entitled to a point of view, and we'll always platform people's points of view on this broken government. Your views have been aired. We'll make some inquiries, see what we get back, and if anyone else in the area has something to say, they can contact us too. But thanks for contacting the programme and speaking to me, Garvin.
All right, great.
Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
All right. If you want a view on that, 086 60 25,000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. So, I mean, obviously, we keep a close eye on developments at Letterkenny University Hospital because it's such an important facility for all of us. And more potentially concerning news from Letterkenny University Hospital, which we are seeking to get some clarification on. But the pathology department and pathologists at Letterkenny University Hospital and other hospitals as well play a vital role in the treatment plan for a patient. They help other healthcare providers, consultants and GPs reach diagnoses. So that makes it an important member of the treatment team. Now, I have been informed that the pathology department users, i.e. GPs and consultants, are being informed that the department can no longer process all samples within its routine day of 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. So from Monday, some samples received by the department will not be processed on the day of receipt. And that means that those samples will not be suitable for analysis due to the delay. The issue, I'm told, is not one of staffing and it's not one of equipment. It's simply down to floor space, having enough space in that department for the people that work there to do their work. Now, we understand as well that options to increase capacity at the hospital have been put to senior management there and the HSC estates, and that the issue has been discussed at the last hospital liaison meeting, but, and that's the hospital CHO1 meeting, but no of the options that were proposed by the head of that department, as I understand it, none of the options to increase floor space to accommodate additional analysers was acceptable to progress to date. So this is obviously going to cause inconvenience to consultants and their patients. So as I say, at this point, where we know that this is the situation, it's not about staffing, it's not about equipment, it's literally about floor space. The head of that department, the manager of pathology, has written or had conversations with senior management at the hospital. They've had senior representations with the HSC estate. It's been discussed at the last hospital CHO1 liaison meeting, but unfortunately, none of the options that were proposed to increase floor space to accommodate additional analysers was acceptable. And also, too, they can't use a private service because they haven't been given the okay to finance that either. So it's not insignificant what impact it might actually have on the workings of the hospital or for GPs in terms of diagnostics. You know, it's possible that GPs might be accustomed to it being a busy department and not getting the results on the day. But effectively, tissue samples or whatever it might be will be sent to the department. They can't all be processed. And that means that those samples then are no longer fit for purpose if they can't be analysed on the day in which they're received. So, as I say, that's just a little bit of news we can bring you. The full consequences of that, of course, we'll tease it out over the course of the next while. Right, okay. Dr. Gerard Rorty is a vet and one inclined to comment on different matters, and we always enjoy having you on the programme. Gerard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm okay. Right, we're responding to the news that the European Parliament has approved the Nature Restoration Law, this despite opposition from certain quarters. Firstly, do you welcome this news, Gerard?
I welcome a Nature Restoration Law in principle. The original Nature Restoration Law was fantastic because it dealt with major problems of biodiversity. lack of nature restoration, lack of carbon sequestration, poor water quality, massive pollution all throughout the 27 member states. So the original proposal was a great proposal.
But?
But farmers mobilised, as they do, and throughout the 26 other member states, there was an incredible cavalcade of tractors and all sorts of unrest on streets. And people have seen it on their news over the last couple of months and wondered, why are all these tractors on the streets in Paris and in Brussels and all these farmers protesting throughout all these European countries? And they successfully watered down or removed all the major teeth of practically everything on the water nature and the nature restoration law. Mick Wallace is on record as saying that it's been massively watered down. However, and this is a total irony for Donegal, the one piece that they didn't remove was the two areas that affect Donegal most. So it's totally ironic that we now have a nature restoration law that was totally watered down, and yet the whole focus is left on the type of ground we have in Donegal. So to give you a quick summary, the only two other countries in the whole of Europe that has more peatland than us are Finland and Estonia. And they're too cold. The area where they have the peatland is too cold to farm. So we in Ireland have 21%. So if you think about it, a fifth of our agricultural area is peatland. Donegal is much higher. It's probably about a half. So that's targeted. The other area that is targeted is what's known as designated sites.
Can we talk about the peatland first, though? What would be the proposals to meet?
So the proposal now, long-term, the short-term targets and long-term, is basically we have to stop farming the way we're farming at the moment, and we're going to have to be flooded and re-wetted, supposedly to reduce carbon release, but it actually exacerbates and increases methane release. But the good news is, and people, when they meet their MEPs canvassing on their doorsteps in June, is that we've been totally insulted because we've been told we can graze water buffalo in Donegal on the peatlands. And, you know, it would be comical. It's sad if it wasn't so comical. You actually read the text and you can see that the European Union are proposing that in places like Donegal, we've got to flood and totally re-wet ground that our forefathers spent hundreds of years dragging boulders out of, putting lime and draining to create agricultural land. We're going to have to flood it, and we're allowed to graze water buffalo on it. People in Donegal don't farm water buffalo. No. Water buffalo is not a viable species for us.
Well, as a vet, how many water buffaloes have you been called out to check on their welfare?
I have dealt with water buffaloes in Africa, but never in Ireland.
No. So, Jared, I just want to be really clear that we all understand exactly what we're talking about here. So, can you give us an example of re-wetting peatland? Okay, so where might that happen and what might that look like, and what farming practices does it mean will no longer happen? If you could answer that sort of in three parts.
Okay, so outside of the Laggan and outside of the Sun Valley, so outside of that narrow strip of East Donegal, all of Inishowen, Glenswilly, Glenfinn, Glencolumbkill, Fulcarra, Gortahort, Ardra, Glentys, the Slieve League Peninsula, South Donegal, all peatland. All that land has been targeted to be flooded. So in other words, the idea is that you put it on underwater and then you're going to be allowed to graze water buffalo on it. And my point is, you can make an argument that that should have been one of the measures, but there was about 20 measures in the original nature restoration law. And the one that has been left in, compliments of all the farmers' protests throughout the 27 countries, the one that has been left in is the one that affects Donegal most in particular.
But does that mean you can come to that in a second, Jared, but again, I want us all to understand it from your perspective clearly. Does that mean then, given the high level of this type of land in Donegal, that to raise the national average, so to speak, our compliance with it, that there's going to be an awful lot of pressure for, absolute compliance across our county?
Well, it's not to meet the national, this is the critical one. It's not even to meet the national average, it's to meet the European average. So in other words, to satisfy the objectives for the 27 countries for the nature restoration law, peatland and designated sites, the two areas that Donegal has a disproportionate amount of, have been targeted. Everything else has been quietly dropped out. All the measures that affect intensive farming quietly dropped out. All the measures that affect pollution throughout Europe quietly dropped out.
So, the Jared, what kind of farming really then? What kind of farming or farming activity that we currently see in Donegal can you see being phased out over the medium and long term then?
You can take, well, we have 9,500 farmers in Donegal, 210 guys milk. They will be able to continue to milk. We have 50 big tillage guys, they will do that. 50 big beef guys, they can do that. Outside of the guys like myself, who's way up in the mountains and not affected by the peatland, the rest of those areas I've just mentioned will be severely limited in what way they can farm. In other words, if you go west of a line between McCool Park and the O'Donnell Park, you're going to see measures, and these are mandatory. These are not just optional. You're going to be measures that Europe's going to stipulate that drains are going to have to be closed and ground has to be flooded. This really is a death knell for farming in Western Eagle.
How does this then work in terms of properties that have been built on this land that are protected by the shucks and the ditches and the drains and what have you? You know, because we're talking also
No, my understanding of it for commercial properties or residential properties and so on, you're going to be allowed to continue to drain land so that those places aren't flooding. The critical one, though, is agricultural land is going to be taken out of production. We have something, just to think in terms of it, we have 345,000 hectares of peatland in Ireland. So a hectare is a football pitch. If you look at the O'Donnell Park, we have 345,000 times the amount of that. Over 50% of Donegal is peatland or designated areas. We have 604 Natura sites. It's basically been a case that Europe has bowed to the pressure from the militant farmers throughout Europe, the continent of Europe. And we have been left as the low-flying, low-hanging fruit. And unfortunately, our farm organisations and our politicians haven't represented us because, from what I can understand, Chris McManus from Sinn Féin and Luke Ming Flanagan have been the only people that have spoken out and objected to this.
All right, stay where you are. Senator Pauline O'Reilly from the Green Party joins us as well. I mean, obviously, presumably on the face of it, Senator, you're happy that this passed yesterday. You believe it to be a turning point. Senator O'Reilly, are you there? No, unfortunately not. Caroline? Senator O'Reilly's not there. Okay, we'll get back to her. Right, so what is the time frame
on
this, Jared?
Just go back. I think. Can I make a point?
And yes,
I think
of course.
It's a useful one to make. Yeah, and I would welcome Senator O'Reilly's point on that because I got a lovely message from the Green Party yesterday because I've got myself organized. I get emails from telling me that I was part of a toxic coalition. So they address anybody who actually opposed this as being part of a toxic coalition. I mean, from the Green Party's point of view, they are totally, totally right. Peatlands need protection. Designated sites need protection. But why railroad an act through that had took all the other 48 measures out? So there are 50 measures initially. They took all the other measures out. The two measures that were left in were the measures that disproportionately affect Donegal.
What's the time frame on this? Like, when are we likely to see?
You will see over the next 10 years. So it's been phased in. So initially, there's going to be, they talk about a third, then a quarter, then a fifth. So long term, over the next 30 to 40 years, peatland in Donegal will not be farmed unless, and this is the total insult, unless we graze water buffaloes. And, you know, the amazing thing about it in terms of, there was so much that the Green Party could have delivered on in terms of the monoculture. So biodiversity is a massive, massive problem. So what do I mean by biodiversity? That's having as many possible plants grown as possible. So if you look at all the dairy farmers in the southeast, almost all of them have one particular grass only, a perennial rye grass. We could have achieved equal objectives from this by encouraging these guys to have a monoculture, in other words, having different species of grass. Now, I admire them because they had an incredible lobby against that. They ensured that that lobby wasn't forced to deliver. But again, to my point is that we are left with this, which will totally devalue farmland in West Donegal.
So, you know,
what people don't realise is that your peatland in Donegal now will become valueless because you're not going to be able to farm it.
Yeah, but so, but is the next fight going to be now that, oh, it is what it is, democratically this was passed, within this agreement, there are emergency break facilities, you know, which give the option for targets for the agriculture ecosystem to be temporarily suspended over exceptional circumstances. So is our next conversation going to be this year, next year, or whatever, about trying to get exemptions for Donegal or particular areas? We'll be arguing.
Our next conversation, Greg, is going to be the fact that there's 3.1 billion, and again, this is a Greens project. There's 3.1 billion allocated in the Biodiversity Act to start buying up Donegal to enlarge Glenbeigh National Park, and that is already happening. Farms are being bought out around Duhurry. So again, what we have to look these people in the eyes and question them is, do they want people, do they want family farms in the highlands of Donegal, or do they just want one great big national park?
Okay, well, what about the argument from the Greens that, you know, 80% of species are in decline and we need to be doing something?
Listen, I welcome that, and there is nobody that is in more favour of that. In fact, I have challenged Chagask. We challenged Chagask at the last farmers' meeting I was at to allocate a minimum of 1% of their budget for research on cattle in the uplands, because we know from research done in Cumbria and Aberystwyth in Scotland that that improves biodiversity. As a farmer, biodiversity is something that I am very, 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 very keen to achieve. I graze cattle on mountains to achieve biodiversity. You're totally right. We are lacking biodiversity. But going back to the point I made earlier, when we have tillage farmers with just a monoculture that's just one single species, when we have a lot of dairy farmers with just one single species, those need to be challenged, mm-hmm. and those need to be encouraged as well to diversify. That was all water. That was all taken out.
Okay.
So the one measure that has effectively been left behind is peatland and designated sites, which disproportionately affect Donegal.
Well, let me put it to you like this then. And as I say, this is just to try and tease it out. You know, at the end of the day, most of the farmers I speak to, small, medium-sized farmers, they're just in it for because of heritage, or because of, you know, family commitments, or because they love it. There's no money in it. Farming has to be subsidised for people to make money from it. Some might say in some areas it is sort of like a sunset industry. Does this not maybe give us an opportunity for a just transition away from, you know, loss-making farming, and to create something new, and at the same time, you know, do something for the environment? As I say, I'm saying that through gritted teeth.
I'm just saying,
you know, like, how long can we flog a dead horse, which for many is farming? Maybe we can use this money and European money to have a just transition, if the inevitable is inevitable in any case.
Well, the first point I'll make to you, there's no sign and there's no promise at all for European money to compensate us being forced out of farming. Mm. That's the first point. The second point is, we've got to wake up and realise in 2050 we will have 10 billion people on the planet. In 2050, because of climate change, we're going to have a very, very narrow temperate zone that can actually graze animals. We're going to have a massive shortage of protein, and that protein is going to be provided on the hills of Scotland, Wales and Ireland, where we can continue to graze animals because we can continue to grow vegetation. So I hear totally what you're saying at the moment. If it, farming has been very difficult, but in fairness to the minister, we have had the best organic scheme introduced last year, probably that I've experienced in farming over the last 40 years. So the balance has totally shifted. Mm-hmm. Farming now in the hills of Donegal with the organic scheme is actually viable, Greg. So it's ironic that from 2023 on, we've actually been viable to be farming in Donegal. Mm. And when I say farming, I mean farming organically. And yet, on the one hand, Europe has introduced a fantastic scheme. The minister's produced a fantastic scheme. And then on the other hand, they say, well, that's grand. There's the scheme. But by the way, we're taking that land out.
I mean, I'm conflating here, but lots doesn't make sense to me. You know, we're getting rid of farming, it seems we're trying to. We're talking about pumping water from the Shannon to Dublin to cool down data centres. And at the same time, we're talking about the environment and signing deals to cut down rainforests and import, you know, beef from Brazil. None of it makes sense to me. And I'll go, you know, like, all something has to be if something's articulated to me to where it makes sense, that's fine. My point of view is very easily shifted. Do you know what I mean? I'm not stuck in any way, shape, or form. But if I look at all of those things I mentioned, it doesn't make sense to me.
The point I would make is that there's nobody as passionate about the environment as me. We totally needed a Nature Restoration Act. We need to deal with biodiversity. But we needed to deal with the other 46 measures. But all those other measures were removed because of farmers campaigning on the streets of Brussels. Now we're left with a draconian measure which disproportionately affects us. So you've cruise ships touring the world, burning up all that carbon. You've got the data centres. You've got all the other. We could talk to Kingdom Come about all the other massive sources of carbon. And yet the wee guys who are farming in West Donegal have been targeted to somehow or other. We're going to save the earth. And the science on it isn't exact, because what nobody can actually respond to is the fact that now we're discovering that re-wetting bogland or peatland actually releases methane. So on the one hand, we're saying, it's brilliant, we'll cut down on the amount of carbon. Now we've discovered methane, which is the other ugly word, we're actually causing the release of methane. Yeah. But the frightening thing about it is, this is now law. This is now law that, so I'm saying to you, farmers who are sitting in Glenfinn or Glenswilly at the moment, thinking about their suckling cows, water buffalo is what they're...
Well, a Carrigart listener wants to know, and we'll leave it on this one, tongue-in-cheek, I presume a Carrigart listener wants to know, where on earth are you going to find water buffalo in Donegal? Well, if they had their way everywhere, but in reality...
No, I looked on Dundee. Tell him I looked on Dundee last night. I'm actually looking over importing some from England. So there is. We're not going to lie down totally.
So Refomar, we could see water buffalo up there in the not too distant future.
Exactly. Well done,
all right,
Greg.
Dr. Good. Jared Rorty, take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed. And we will speak to Senator Pauline O'Reilly a little later on. I'll put some of Jared's points to her. She had another interview lined up and had to leave for that.